such a beautiful song. People forget how good he really was, especially at the start of his career. John Denver and Rocky Mountain High, 105.7 ABC Darwin, 783 Alice Springs and right across the Territory. Friday afternoon gives us a chance to say hello to people from around the Territory and let them remember what life was like and what life, well, was like, especially when they were younger. Lena Pankoi, lovely to see you here. Thanks for coming in and spending time with us today. Hey, tell me about that song. Because when I started to hear it this afternoon, I thought, I haven't heard that song for a long time. It's such a beautiful song.
I've got that CD of that tape, which I bought years ago, and I still got it, but I don't have a CD to play on it now. So, but it was one of my favourite songs, and I always played it whenever we went out camping or anything like that. I'd always play that.
Now, and you love a bit of camping, because I was reading, and I said I met your, I met Marg Carroll the other day, and she wrote this book called The Man Who Loved Crocodiles, and I didn't know it, but of course, you're in that book.
Yeah, I do love camping, and I still go camping when one of my sons take us out camping and set us up and look after us and give us a good time. And we've had a lot of camping with our grandchildren, with my children and our grandchildren. They were lucky children because we took them out camping everywhere, and they enjoyed it.
Have you got a favourite spot? What's your favourite spot in the Northern Territory?
Mary River country. I love that country over there, at Point Stewart area, and because that's where my husband grew up around there, and he took us out there, and we just loved it because it was a buffalo country, and we'd sit out in the edge of the plain and set camp and just relax and enjoy the view and watch the buffaloes.
Oh, yeah, but you're not telling me everything, because your sons have got more than just a, you know, it's not like you go with some just a swag. You guys go fully rigged, don't you? Give me an idea about what you take when you go camping with the sons.
Well, a friend of mine said that when I go camping, I always take everything, including kitchen sink. And also, I got a good friend who's a nurse, and in the early days, and as soon as I mentioned going camping, she'd say, I'll be in on it, and she'll be there with me, and she'd come out camping with me and the kids and Peter, and not only just my kids, I always raked up other kids. One year I had 15 children, and they said to me, how are you going to look after these kids? I said, they're all right. I'll look after them. And I gave them all different colour hats, all coloured hats, so I can see them for miles. And I said, go out. You can go wherever you want to go, but watch out for snakes or anything. But we never seen any. But the children would go out on the plane, and I got binoculars, and I'll see where so-and-so or there's one over there, one there, and I just keep watching them, and we have a good time.
Spot them with their hats.
Yeah, with the hats. And if I don't see one hat missing, and I'd say, now so-and-so's missing, I would have to find out where he is.
And so when you camp now, though, I reckon you should tell people, you go with hot water showers. I can't believe that somebody in a tent has a hot water shower. How do you rig that up?
Oh, we got my son who takes us out camping now, Liz. He's bought us a hot water. It's gassed, a little one, just nice. And we got those fold-up showers.
Yeah. And so, you just rig the whole thing up and
In a few minutes it pops open, and got a drum of water in there, and you have a hot shower.
There you go. So if you ever want to go for luxury camping, the Pankoi family, they're the ones to go with, because they've got it all.
Two-bedroom tent. We both got a bed each, so he got his and I got mine, and I listen to my music. And he snores, so we're right.
So you've got the John Denver on while he's snoozing. Let's go a long way back, because a lot of people talk about the stolen generation, and you had that experience as a young woman. You weren't actually born in the Northern Territory. You were born in Port Augusta, I think, isn't that right?
No, I was born in Bulganya Station, north of Port Augusta. And that's where I was born anyway, but I grew up around, it's not that far from Coober Pedy, but I grew up around Coober Pedy and Lake Phillips and all like that. That was my stepfather's country, so.
And I know it's not very gentlemanly of us to ask you how old you are, but what year were you born?
Really don't know. Because being a bush kid and just roaming the bush, I don't really know. But the year when I was picked up by a lady from the protection board, I was my stepdad said she's seven, and so he might have known.
And what year was that where you were picked up in? The 50s or the
40s? No, 42. I think it was.
Wow. So you've been right. So the growing up outside of Coober Pedy in sort of the early 1940s would have been pretty extraordinary. It's not like there would have been anybody around, would there?
No, there wasn't anybody. Oh, there were people around, the indigenous people, you know, the families in around the Lake Phillips. And my stepdad always had a job, but he was a shearer. So he did shearing at Ingemar Station and any of those other small station around, then he'll go over to Roxby Down, and we were over there for a fair while, shearing. To me it was a long time, but it wasn't that long because I was only seven when they took me away. So
And your family had managed to keep you away from the Aborigine Protection Board for quite a while. I mean, the fact that they managed to make it through 7 years is quite good, because people knew that they were trying to find you at that point quite early on, didn't they?
Yeah, because I think the police at Coober Pedy said, oh, there's some half-caste kids around here. There's two, Biddy and Lena. And when we got a wind of it, or not me, but family, we'd gone, and we'd go back down to the station again, away from Coober Pedy. Then when my stepdad got a job at Roxby Down, Mr. Greenfield, the station owner, he used to, when he knew that they weren't allowed to come on the station without letting them know, so when he knew somebody was coming, he'd get someone to take us down to the next station, which was Perkilio, which belonged to the family, their family. And the old couple used to say, Minnie, you make sure those children are a long way in the bush because somebody's coming, they're going to take them away. So mum would take us in the bush.
So even when you were young, you knew that you were kind of running away from something, running away from being taken away from your mum and dad?
No, really, we didn't. We didn't know that, because Mum would say, "Oh, we'll go hunting. We'll go over this way, you know. And she'll take us away from this scenery where the people could see us. And you know, we're hunting. As far as I was concerned, we were hunting. We didn't know people was chasing after us."
So give me an idea about what it was like from being taken immediately. It would have been, I mean, very upsetting to be moved away from your parents. But I believe that when I read around what you've said previously, that in the long term, unlike a lot of people, you thought actually a lot of good things happened in your life because of you being taken away.
Yeah, when we were taken and the lady picked us up, and I'll start from where she took us. We took us from, I think it was Condambo Station, the old station, not Glendambo. And when she come there, we, all the half-caste kids, we were all down somewhere else swimming in the dams. And that's where we stayed all day, because, well, that lady was there. And then the evening time when she's gone home, we'd come back to the camp, and we all said, "We're missing out on lollies. This lady is giving them lollies, and us kids are missing out because we're sitting in the a scrub over there. So we came back. And my mum looked at us and she said, "What you come back for?" She said, "We come back for lollies because those other kids are getting lollies and we're not." So lolly was our downfall.
So the sweets were what dragged you in. I mean, it's real Pied Piper stuff. And from there you moved to Port Augusta, I think, was the first place you were really taken.
Yeah, well, that next day, that lady said, "Oh, we want Biddy and Lena." And she said, "Oh, I want them to come to Port Augusta with me." And my dad said, "No, unless I go with you." He said, "Because I want to see where my kids are going." And she said, "Yes, you can come. That'll be good. But if you don't let me take them, then somebody else will come in and take them, and you won't see them because they'll send them to Adelaide or some other city. But if they come with me, they'll stay with me in Port Augusta." So he agreed. So next morning, when we got up, all the other family with the half-caste kids, they were all gone. There was nobody there, only us. But Dad kept his promise and he took us down to the siding down at Condamba and put us on the train. And he came with us. Mum and Dad both came. But they wouldn't put us on the passenger van because they said it was full, but they had only one lady with a child and a man, and that lady that was picking us up. Only the three adult and a baby kid.
So you travelled in like a fettler's van or a...
We travelled in a cattle truck, cattle van, with a chaff bag to sit on.
And then when you got to Port Augusta, what sort of place were you taken to?
To a children's home. It was very nice. We got there middle of the night and... It was raining, it was wet, 2nd of November, that was given as my birthday, and but it's beautiful, it was beautiful because we had a bed to sleep on, because we, you know, being a camp kid, we just slept on swags.
Yeah.
But it was we slept on bed.
So it must have been difficult, like, as you're growing up in that, to... You know, there's obviously the pain of being separated from your family, but then there's the sort of luxury of what was being offered to you that you didn't know about beforehand.
All those were nice, all those were good, but missed my mum and dad, and I knew where they were, but I didn't know what cottage they lived, were staying in.
Mm.
And I was too stressed out, you know, thinking about them, and this is the first time we have ever been separated from our parents. And I had cousins there in the home as well. And I ran away a couple of times.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where did you run to? Where would you go?
Just outside the fence and hid under a salt bush. But then the lady said to me, "You run away again and we'll send you to Adelaide and you'll never see your family." Oh, that frightened me. I said, "No, I don't want to run away from my family. I want to stay with my family because I had my cousin there." And another thing, I refused to talk English because I can only talk language. I said, "Yes, please, no, thank you." That's all I knew. And my cousin said, "Well, you'll have to start talking this white lady's language." I said, "No." She said, "Well, I'm not going to help you." She said, "I'm not going to ask for you and explain that you want a piece of bread or something like that. If you can't ask for yourself, you can starve." And I said, "Well, I got my mother's language. I don't want to learn hers." And she said, "Well, you think about it. You'll starve because I'm not going to ask the lady for you." So I had to start learning to talk English.
So it was your cousin who forced you to learn English. She wouldn't do anything. So it sounds to me like you were just a tiny bit, Lena Panquet. And if you've just joined us, Lena Panquet is in my Remember segment this afternoon. You were a bit of a rebel. You were a bit of a naughty girl.
Yeah, I think I was, but... I think my cousin sought that out. And,
Let's jump a long way forward, because obviously you spend quite a long time in those circumstances and you grew up learning English, and learning basically how to behave. And you were taught Western manners and Western ways. Well, as you were growing up, did you really get much chance to ever go back to your homelands or to see people that you knew, cousins or uncles or aunties or even mum and dad at some time?
As we were growing up, because we were board kids, protection board kids, we weren't allowed out. Once we're in there, we're in there. And I was in there for a fair while. We didn't miss out on anything, only the love of our parents. But the ladies that looked after us, they were beautiful, they were lovely. If we got hurt or anything, they'd pick us up and set us on their knee and, give us a cuddle and things like that. They were beautiful ladies that looked after us.
Because you hear a lot of stories. I mean, you do hear a lot of stories of bad situations for children, and obviously they've been well documented. But from your experience, that wasn't the case. It was actually quite a loving environment.
Yeah, that's true. And some of the children that grew up with me, some are still alive, and they still live in Port Augusta, and they would say the same things. They would never say anything bad against the home or the people that looked after them. They were beautiful people.
Remember with Lena Panqui, right across the territory on 105.7 ABC Darwin, 783 in Alice Springs. We could sit around talking all afternoon about that, just even that experience. But, of course, long life for Lena. Give me an idea when you first came back to cross over into the borders of the Northern Territory. How old were you?
I came over when I was not quite sure, 18 or 19. I came up here. I went to Sydney to start with. I went over to Singleton to a Bible college because I wanted to be, I wanted to train to be like the two missionary ladies that to look after children and be like them. And so I went over there and done 2 years. And after I graduated from over there, and I went back to the home because I was still under 21 and I wasn't free. So I still went back to the home, and they said to me, "It's your choice. Where would you like to go? You think about it. Where would you like to go when your holidays finish?" So I said, "Oh, all right, that'll be good." So next day I said to the ladies, I said, they said to me, "Have you thought about it?" And I said, "Yes, I would like to go to Currawang, which is over in Esperon, because I had a girlfriend over there, a missionary's daughter that was in the home. They were missionaries, and the daughter, I got friendly with the daughter." And they said, "All right, that was my choice," because they said, "Your choice." I said, "Yeah, all right, that's good. I'd like to go over there," because it's an Aboriginal community, and the people over there were staying there, missionaries, and their daughter was there. So I said, "That's where I wanted to go."
But you never got there. You ended up here.
And anyway, they thought about the next day. They said, "Oh, we'll pray about it." I said, "Oh, that's good." I said, "Yeah, all right, that's where I want to go." So anyway, they next day, they called me, and they said, "I'm afraid you're not going to Currawang. You're going to go to Darwin." I said, "What for Darwin? I don't even know where it is." So I said, "You're going to Darwin because they need somebody over there for 6 months to relieve one lady. And because she wants to go on holiday and we haven't got anybody to relieve her." And I said, "Oh, all right, 6 months, yes, all right, as long as I go back to, as long as I go to Currawang after."
And so the job was what? When you arrived in Darwin, what was your job?
Looking after children, got a cottage mother, taking over this other old lady's job. So 6 months.
6 months, which turned into, I don't know, how long have you been here now?
50-something years.
50-something years. It keeps on happening.
No, I'd never swap it now.
And you never went to Currawang, that's for sure. You never got down there. Well, I reckon we'll come back. We'll play another of your songs and we'll come back and talk some more, because we've got to find out more about this marvellous husband of yours who kept you stuck in the ad territory for over 50 years and then made you grow up here and then brought you this life. Lena Panqui is my my guest today in the Remember spot, and we'll play a song. This one is for your husband. You say that you're going to play this Slim...
Yeah, that's for my husband, Peter.
Why? Tell me why we're choosing this Slim Rusty song.
Because he always says, when I was a certain age, this is what we used to do back then. And I said, yeah, but that was then. We're in a different year now and different time. We're ahead of what you used to be when you was young.
So here we are. This is Slim Dusty for the hubby who gets told things are not the same on the land. Right across the territory, 105.7 ABC Darwin and 783 on Alice Springs.
Movement today at the station out back. Just a man with his head in his hands. He'll soon walk away, just the shirt on his back. Things are not the same on the land. His world floats away as tears flood his eyes, broken dreams and disappearing plans. Oh, the rain will be too late if it waits till July. Things are not the same on the land. Remember the days and the simple country ways, when a man who wouldn't work was not a man. But you can never go back, life's just not like that. Things are not the same on the land. We'll soon see the day when the tough won't survive, and we wonder if our leaders understand. The promise of a rainbow won't feed a hungry child. Things are not the same on the land. Remember the days and the simple country ways, when a man who wouldn't work was not a man. But you can never go back, life's just not like that. Things are not the same on the land. But you can never go back, life's just not like that. Things are not the same on the land.
Things are not the same on the land. 105.7 ABC Darwin, Slim Dusty, chosen by my guest today, Lena Panqui, who's in the studio and remembering for us this afternoon. There's a lot of life to fit in, but I need to know how you meet this fella, Peter Panqui, because you've got as you say, you call it half caste, which you're not allowed to say anymore. It's not something that you're allowed to say anymore, But then you meet this fella who's sort of got a similar background from you, but he's got Chinese parents as well as Aboriginal parents. You've got white parents and Aboriginal parents. How do you meet this fella at Retta Dixon?
He was working there, and he was from the home. He was one of the stolen generations as well, but he said always said that he's only been there 3 years. Then they told him, you're too old now, you got to go. And... because in those days, boys, once they turned 14, they get kicked out of the home or sent out, and the girls got to stay until they're 21. And anyway, so he was there working, and that's where I met him.
What was it you liked about him when you first saw him?
I don't know. I just liked him.
And he liked you.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the first dates you went on?
No, we didn't go on dates because we were both in the home and both no privacy.
No privacy. So what did you do? You just sat around and held hands?
Yes, probably. Can't remember too far.
You can't remember that. I reckon you can remember, but you just won't tell me today.
Well, it's not only you there, there's others out there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, you keep it clean and then we just imagine that. Was it romantic, though?
Very romantic.
Very romantic. So how does it get to the point where you stop working at Retta Dixon and then you start moving out bush with Peter?
No, we got married and we lived at Winelli. In those days, it was only just all the Sydney William huts and that, and we lived there. And Peter worked in town. He worked for Works and Housing, and then he had a job with. He had various jobs here and there, and he's always had a job. And we had three children at that time. Then we got a. Not housing, welfare house.
Yeah.
At Nightcliff, and he worked from there. And Nightcliff was a long way, you know. It'd take a lunch, you'll get there to the beach, and we stayed there for years. And Pete had jobs here and there. He worked out at Beatrice Hill with the buffaloes, and he worked with he did buffalo. Crocodile shooting as well. Mm. On his holidays, he'd go and get shooting crocodiles.
And I've got to ask, though, what was Nightcliff like? Because you say, you've got to take a lunch to get to Nightcliff. Now it's like, 10 minutes, you just drive into town and there you are. That's my part of the world. I love living there. I reckon it's Nightcliff or nothing, frankly.
Well, we lived in, it was that far. When we lived in Winelli, to go to a Nightcliff beach, we took lunch and planned it, that we were going to go for a picnic to Nightcliff, and it took a long time to get there, but we got there.
And you'd go to Nightcliff beach to swim?
Yeah, it was good. The kids used to swim there and everything, and it wasn't built up or anything. They had the Seabreeze Hotel.
I was going to say, the Seabreeze Hotel would have been there, though.
Yeah, Seabreeze Hotel was there, and... But other than that, there was nothing, where we used to take the kids picking cherry plums in the bush is where Kmart is, and you had to go right around on Lee Point Road to get there, and there wasn't that shortcut.
Yeah.
You go on Trow Road.
Or just go across on the bridge and walk through that way. No?
None of that, and we had to drive right around to... Lee Point Road and come in through that way.
Wow. So how do you end up moving from Nightcliff out to where you end up in Humpty Doo?
We moved from Nightcliff because Peter had a job out at Capelga. He got a job with CSRO, and they gave him a manager's job out at CSRO with Capelga, so we moved out there. All the other children have all grown up by now and living in town. They've got their own ways, own life. And we just had the two, youngest one, a son and a daughter, and we moved to Capelga, and they caught a bus from South Alligator to go to Jabiroo for schooling.
So after all these years... You're now still living here in the Northern Territory. You're both highly regarded. I think you've won Orders of Australia and all sorts of things. Between the two of you, you're highly regarded in the community. What is it? Give me one thing that you like still about the Northern Territory and one thing that you think has changed too much for you in the Northern Territory.
What I like about the Northern Territory, especially Darwin, it's beautiful. And it's sort of free, and I don't know. Darwin itself is just different to any other town, any other cities. It's just, I just fell in love with it because of the weather and everything. Some people would say, oh, it's too hot. I'd say, I don't care if it's too hot. I don't like that cold. And every time I used to go down south to see my family, I just, I couldn't get enough blankets on me to keep me warm. So I said, nah, that's not my life. My life is in Darwin, and that's where I'll be. And what I don't like about it now is from my area where I'm living in Umptidoo, it's getting too built up, too many houses, too many people. But, you know, they're good people. They got everybody who lives out there, they got their own lives and own real good neighbours, good friends, and good people. But too many houses.
Too many houses. Lena, look, honestly, it's just, when it gets to these conversations, they're always too short and there's never enough cups of tea, and it just takes, you know, takes away what we could possibly talk about. I reckon we'll have to leave it there, but there must be a chapter or two to come back to. Maybe we'll get you back in to have another yarn later on. Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for coming in and remembering with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Lena Panqui is in the book. Well, if you want to also find and read more, you'll find out more about her life as well as Peter's life in The Man Who Loved Crocodiles and Stories of Other Adventurous Australians, that book that I told you about, Marg Carroll's book. Marg was in with us the other day, and in fact, Lena made a little speech at the launch of that book. But if you want to find out more about the family and where Lena did and what Peter did and all of those things, are much more able to be expanded upon in that book, where you've got hundreds of pages to tell the story.